Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live Open Forum today. And a great couple of guests for you this hour. Tim Staples, second hour. First hour, Patrick Madrid, who you probably know from one of the many ways. Patrick Madrid is out there in the world, the author of more than 25 books. Long time here at Catholic Answers, 8 years here at Catholic Answers, and now host of his own radio show, conveniently called The Patrick Madrid Show, on Immaculate Heart Radio mornings. Hi, Patrick Madrid. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Si. It's great to be back with you again.
Let me just give out the number real quick. Any question you have on the life, the history of Catholic faith, the church, any question having to do with Catholic faith, and you don't have to be Catholic to call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Patrick, I think of you as one of the best tweeters that I know, and I have to ask you something because I think I might be pushing the boundaries of propriety on Twitter, meaning I don't always reply quite right away to people. What is the etiquette limit for a reply to a Twitter?
Etiquette limit in the sense of how long do you wait?
Yeah, how long should you? I mean, you should have done it by now. You know, like, oh, that's too late now.
Oh, you know, it just depends on who you're talking to and what the issue is. Sometimes people will just try to badger you or harass you, and you just don't have to talk to them.
Oh.
But generally, I try to respond to people as quickly as I see the comments that they make to me. And so I really enjoy interacting with people, and I find that a lot of people, they even get more into the radio program itself because they can connect with the host during the show in real time.
Well, that's the thing. You tweeted out about being on this show this afternoon, and then I don't know how long it was later that I saw it, and then I tweeted how much I was looking forward to it, and then you tweeted back right away, and I was like, see, that's the way I got to get. I got to get on top of this.
Yeah. Well, I guess I must admit I am on Twitter a lot, so. For me, I do see the stuff quickly because I'm looking at it a lot. So I guess for me, that's the excuse. But if you're not on it a lot, then I could see why a lot of time would go by.
Well, I think the main thing, the other thing I guess I want to clear up with you as far as Twitter etiquette is I have the feeling that as Catholics, as a community, like when we have problems, like maybe disagree about, you know, something a bishop said or what somebody else thinks about the liturgy, I think we should fight those things out on Twitter. I think that's the perfect venue for publicly airing our – how about you?
You say you do think it's the right venue or you don't?
I was teasing. I said I do. Okay. Because and partly I said that because I saw your tweet where you had two wolves. It looked like one of the wolves was going to tear the other one's face off. And you said, let's not be like this on Catholic Twitter. And I was surprised to see not everyone agreed with you, but I thought it was a good point. I mean,
well, yeah, and I posted that yesterday. I think it was yesterday because there was a little, what would you call it? Kind of a controversy that arose. One of the Catholic Twitter ladies, she posted a video clip. It was a Vine video, I think, or maybe it was a YouTube video, but it showed a couple of Catholic priests who were at the Steubenville conference and the youth conference.
Yeah, I saw that.
They were on stage. What's that?
Oh, I saw that video. Yeah.
Oh, did you? Okay, yeah. So Father Leo Padalinghug was one of the priests, and then Father Mano, I believe, is his last name. I don't know that other priest. And they were at this youth conference, and they were on stage. They were wearing their priestly attire, so the black shirts and the black pants. They were breakdancing. Now, they were not dancing with women. They were not, you know, dancing in any kind of romantic kind of dancing. It was breakdancing. It was like fun. The kids saw them do the robot and their different funky moves and things like that. And so she posted a video of this, and her caption was something to the effect of Catholic young people don't care about the faith and Catholic priests are not joyful, said nobody ever who attended one of these conferences.
Right.
And then Catholic Twitter just erupted. Because you had all kinds of people who were in favor of it, and then you had the people who started condemning and complaining, and this isn't right, and the priest shouldn't be doing that. And you could almost kind of see that happening coming. You could see that this would take place. So the post that I put up on Twitter was simply to say, Catholics, let's not act this way on Catholic Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't preach. I didn't say anything. I just showed the picture of the two wolves like you saw. And I think that the picture told the story that I was trying to make. And then it, almost as if to prove my very point,
I know.
The wolves on Twitter started up coming after me.
I know.
So
yeah, that's,
what can you do?
What can you do? Well, first of all, I have to say I'm on the side of absolutely no fun or dancing for priests.
I think you're a Jansenist, aren't you?
I think that's a terrible idea. But I thought that was amazing that you say, let's not, you know, don't tear each other apart like the wolves. And then people just start tearing you apart like wolves.
Yeah, I was tempted to type a response to say, you're proving my point. But I thought, I think it's self-evident. So yeah. Anybody who wants to see that conversation... And I mean, that's just a blip on the screen, but my address at Twitter is @PatrickMadrid, and people who want to see this, they can see it there.
Now, when you say Catholic Twitter, there isn't actually a thing. You mean like Catholic people who kind of, I don't know, do people, is it a community of people? But there's not like a Facebook group or something on Twitter that's Catholic Twitter.
There might be. I mean, for all I know, there is one. I'm not consciously aware of one. I don't belong to one as far as I know, but I think it's more tribal. Social media, certainly we see this on Facebook, and Twitter definitely is the case. There's a kind of tribal quality to it where people kind of gravitate to people that they find interesting or funny, or they help them spiritually or something. And it's also, I find in Twitter, it's a world that has circles within circles within circles. And so you've got different people who travel in different circles. Some of the people you'll see in other circles, but it's not all the same group of people. So what we see here is Catholics in general who will interact with each other sometimes or a lot or never. And usually when something erupts like this little video controversy that popped up with the two priests dancing, that's usually when you see all different kinds of Catholic people coming together, and not everybody agrees with each other.
No, but I wonder how much the social pressure that we're under to try to be different from the culture, but to make clear that what Christ offers, what the church offers is in fact a different thing than is on offer in the culture, that pressure kind of maybe, and I don't mean to be too serious with you, but it kind of maybe makes us lose our joy sometimes. Like we've got to be stern or something.
I was just reading something to the point that you're making. I was just reading something from a lady who is on Twitter, and I won't mention her name just for the sake of her privacy. And somebody else was complaining about her as a Catholic on Facebook. And so then there was like defriending going on and all that. So I'm afraid one of the realities of social media is that people, it can bring out the best in people. It can also bring out the worst in people. And sometimes Catholics, and not just Catholics, I mean, this is true of anybody. It's true of atheists. It's just a human problem where people can get carried away by emotions. And that's when I think things start to spin out of control. So my policy personally, I try to avoid those controversies. I try to stay out of them. And my job, as I see it, is to try to kind of encourage people and assist, give information. And I like to put funny things out there as well. But I really try hard to stay away from those controversies.
Yeah, I noticed that you like to put funny things out. I have no idea why your tweet today about that you're going to be on the show with me includes... 3 or 4 pictures of Tom Cruise jumping up in the air. Was that supposed to express your joy at that you're coming home with me? Or
yeah, that was my joy.
Oh, okay.
Like Peaches and Herb reunited, and it feels so good. You used to be a host on Immaculate Heart Radio, so it's kind of fun to have a chance to work with you again, Si.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll take a quick break. The lines are full, but that doesn't mean there won't be lines opening up. So please, if you have a question on any aspect of the life, the faith, the history, the morals of Catholic people in the Catholic Church, give us a call, 888-318-7884. We will be right back with Patrick Madrid right after this.
This is Bishop Robert Barron. You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Howdy, folks. This is Jimmy Akin, and I'm here to tell you about a very special promotion we look forward to every year. It's our annual store-wide summer sale in the online shop at Catholic.com. This online event features savings from 10 to 50% and more in some cases on every book, track, CD, DVD, ebook, and MP3 we carry, including my newest book, A Daily Defense. With lower prices and a great selection of solid Catholic resources, it's a sale you can't afford to miss. So log on now and all this month at shop.catholic.com and take advantage of our very special prices. You know it's all good stuff because it's from the people you know and trust at Catholic Answers. That's shop.catholic.com.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpin. In Matthew 20:20, the mother of James and John approached Jesus with a request that her two sons sit one at his right and the other at his left in his kingdom. The other disciples, upon hearing the request and fearing that they might be missing out, became indignant with them. Jesus then assured them all that unlike the Gentiles, greatness for them had to consist of service to each other rather than in self-seeking. Isn't this the very core of the Christian message? And yet, so immersed are we in ourselves that without the help of the Lord's grace, there is no way that we can get out of our own heads and act unselfishly. It is on the cross that Jesus shows us how. It is from the cross that we are empowered to do it. Incidentally, by the way the apostles turned out, there is definitely hope for us. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Open forum today. Tons and tons of questions for our guest, Patrick Madrid, who hosts the Patrick Madrid Show on Immaculate Heart Radio, getting more relevant every day, I would say. Do you feel that way, Patrick?
That's inside baseball right there.
Okay. Let's go to Tony in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Tony, you are on with Patrick Madrid. What's your question?
I'm calling because my question is about souls in purgatory and canonized saints. I read a book called Purgatory, Explained by the Lives and Legends of the Saints by Father Shoup. And
great
my
book.
Understanding reading that, yeah, I understand that after reading that book, that the souls in purgatory pray for us, and perhaps that some of those prayers are answered as miracles, which might be used in the process of canonization. So I was wondering, why do we assume that after two miracles, the soul is not in purgatory anymore, or that all the miracles are made by souls that have gone into heaven already?
Mm-hmm. Well, the general assumption is that the souls in purgatory are not, they are not in the same situation that we are here as the church militant, where we can actively pray for others. I mean, I believe that they probably can pray for us, but they're undergoing their purification and they're longing for their entrance into heaven, which will take place at some point. The church's teaching on the need for miracles as corroborating evidence for first for the beatification, which is the major step just before canonization of a saint, and then a second miracle required for the canonization. It's based on the assumption that these are men and women, boys and girls who are in heaven with God, and they are permitted by God to pray for us and to intercede in a way that will bring about a miracle, which ultimately comes from God himself, but he does things for us through the saints. So the general assumption on the part of the church is that they're already in heaven. So I don't think it would be quite accurate to say that we look at the souls in purgatory as capable of working miracles for us that would be used as evidence for a beatification or a canonization. Those generally, and I know I'm repeating myself, but I think it's worth repeating. it's assumed that they're in heaven, which is why we then declare them worthy of veneration. The souls in purgatory are not, strictly speaking, worthy of veneration in the way that the saints in heaven are. There'll be saints in heaven in due time, but they're not quite there yet. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. So miracles are, the church assumes that they are in heaven already.
Yes. In other words, because the process of canonization is one that determines, for the sake of the church universal, whether or not the church will proclaim this man or woman, boy or girl, as worthy of veneration. And that ultimately takes place with canonization. But even at the level of beatification, we then know with certitude that they are in heaven with God and they are interceding for us.
Okay. That answers my question. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you very much, Tony. And we go now to Faith in Louisiana. Faith, your question for Patrick Madrid.
Hi. My mother and dad were married for 50 years, and when my dad died, and my mother stayed, single for about 10 years or so, and she remarried. And she's been married to this man for a good 15 years or so. His health is declining now, and before they had gotten married, my mother had a prenup done so that the money that my father had left her could be used for her health care when she got to the point where she might need assistance at home. Well, the federal government does not acknowledge prenups, so if they put this her husband into a nursing home, they will start taking all of my mother's money that was left for her care. But the option has been given that if they get a divorce and they could still live together in the house, because she would need someone to take care of him, that then the federal government would not have any access to her money. What would be the guidelines or the feelings of the Catholic Church if they were to divorce for that reason?
Okay. Before I attempt an answer, tell me, did you say that your mom was married to your father for 50 years, 50, or 15 years, 15?
50. 49 and some few months.
Okay. So she was married to him. So she, when your father died, her first husband died, she must have been either 70 or maybe a little older than that, or right around the age of 70. And so now she's been married to this other man for, you say, 15 years. So she's in her mid or even late 80s by now, right?
Yes, mid.
Okay.
Correct.
All right. I just want to make sure I understood the nature of the question. I have to say this is a really more of a legal question, and it bears on two points. One is the canon law of the church and how canon law governs marriages. And then, of course, there's a question of civil law. And since I'm not a lawyer, either canon or civil, I can't offer you any legal advice. It wouldn't be appropriate for me to try to do so. I can only offer you my impression. And I would encourage you to sit down with a canon lawyer and find out what the actual law of the church would stipulate on this issue. But my impression, solely my own impression, speaking as a private person here, would be that it would not be the right answer for them to get a divorce, because in essence, it would be a lie. If they're not really intending to divorce and live separately, it would be kind of a legal fiction, and it would be a kind of deception that would be quote unquote fooling the state, even though the state might wink and nudge and say, we understand what you're doing, but this is what we need to do. I personally would view it that way. I would be more than happy to be corrected by a canon lawyer if there's, some situation the church foresees where something like that could be done. But my instinct is to say that's probably not the right answer.
Okay. All right.
Faith, hang on a second. You were just going to ask the question I was going to ask. So how does she find a canon lawyer, Patrick?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, let me offer you two things. One, first of all, is in your diocese, are you in Louisiana? Are you...
Yeah. Well, she and I are in different dioceses, but
you're in different dioceses. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then let's just say that she's in Shreveport, as an example. Then you would contact the chancery office in Shreveport, and you would inquire with them, how could you make contact with somebody on their marriage tribunal, one of their canon lawyers, and they can arrange that for you. And that can be done by phone, or you could do it by email. So there's a variety of ways to do that. But you want to talk to whoever the canon lawyer would be for the diocese that she lives in. The other suggestion I would make would be to get a book by a canon lawyer. His name is Ed Peters. And the name of the book is escaping me right now, but it's published by Ascension Press. It's easily available at any Catholic bookstore. It's on Amazon. And the title is something along the lines of 100 Answers to Your Questions on Marriage and Annulments, or Remarriage and Annulments. There's something along those lines. And he very likely will have an answer to this very question in that book. It's been a long time since I've looked at it. But it's a magisterial book in the sense that he has the qualifications to give you a decisive opinion on this kind of an issue. So I think that would be another resource you could avail yourself of.
Okay, Faith?
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Hang in there.
888-318-7884, the number here at Catholic Answers. It is an open forum day. Patrick Madrid here with us now to take your questions. And open forum, Patrick, you could that's interesting. I hadn't heard you get a canon law type question before. But almost any question, like you're a church historian, right? That's one of your areas of study.
Well, I've studied a lot of church history, but I don't have a PhD in church history, but I'm what you might call an amateur church historian, but I don't have a degree in church history.
I am.
The way somebody who would rightfully be called a church historian would have.
I got you. So that's very humble. But if I ask you a church history question, I'm pretty sure you'll know the answer.
And I'll give it a good shot.
I just want to encourage people, church history questions, questions on faith and morals, questions on the doctrines and dogmas of the Catholic Church, our habits, our traditions, any of those are welcome.
I have a question that came up on Twitter just now, if I can mention it to you.
Sure.
Because you'll be one of the ones who could answer this question. This is from Donna Loscar on Twitter. She says, we love us some more Patrick Madrid on Catholic Answers. I hope they treat you to Taco Tuesday. And she's aiming that at you guys at Catholic Answers. So I don't know what to tell her. I just said, me too. I hope they treat me to Taco Tuesday. So you'll have to let me know the outcome of this particular question that she's asking.
Okay, first of all, no more Twitter questions. If that's going to be if you're going to try to get free food out of this,
oh, yeah.
No more Twitter questions. Patrick, I got to tell you, we didn't do Taco Tuesday today. We're preparing for. I'm doing a talk tonight at a parish that we're streaming on the web, and all of our resources have gone into that. We didn't have the money for Taco Tuesday.
No more money. No more taco money. Okay.
No, but if people want to see the talk at 7 p.m. Pacific time, you just go to our Facebook page and you can get a link to stream it there.
Where will that be held? And for those who can't get to Facebook in the meantime,
oh, Ascension Parish here in San Diego, only about 15 miles from where we are here.
Very nice
in El Cajon. Yeah, so. You see, Patrick, you
will they be serving tacos at that event?
I believe they will not.
I might swing by if that's the case.
But generally, when I show up, there are cookies. So there might be cookies.
I'd rather have tacos.
I know that, Mr. Madrid. Oh, Real Madrid. Is that – but now if you say it in Spanish, it's Real Madrid?
Real, yes.
Real Madrid. Yeah. And but you are the Real Madrid. As a matter of fact –
yeah, like the Real McCoy.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. But Madrid. I get
that's
how that
right.
works. So I'm really glad I got to turn your taco question around to a plug for my talk tonight.
Oh, yeah, that's a good – yeah, you actually did that. That's true.
Yeah.
But just think of all the people right now who are distracted, who are now hungry thinking about tacos. They're not even thinking about your talk now.
Yeah, I'm one of them. Like you really got me on the Taco Tuesday thing. As a church historian, I guess the question that I wanted to ask, because I have this question. It seems a little wild. The world and the church and everything, it just seems like we live in a wild age. Is there a time, like in the history of the 2,000 years of the church, where you would say, yeah, it's kind of like that time? Like, it's not like the French Revolution, where they were, a Western country like France is killing Catholics in the street. But is there a time that you look back and you go, that's kind of an analogy for where we are now?
That is a good question. I honestly think that the Catholic Church, globally speaking, has always been in more or less of an uproar. It's always been more or less in a situation of commotion and crisis. I guess we have to pause for a minute, but I've, I can finish answering that on the other side of the break.
I hope you will. Patrick Madrid is our guest this hour. It is not Taco Tuesday, but it is open forum. Any question you've got on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church, we're happy to take. 888-31-TRUTH. We'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, this is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Keep your dial tuned to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett. Join me for a show dedicated to Catholic apologetics and evangelization as we connect viewers to prominent leaders in the church today and touch on just about everything relating to the church, from doctrinal issues to family concerns, social issues, evangelization, ethics, you name it.
Catholic Answers Live TV, Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Television.
Monsignor Robert Hugh Benson's masterpiece, Lord of the World, is, in a word, prophetic. Originally published in 1907, it depicts a world where relativism has triumphed over objectivity, a world where, in the name of tolerance, religious doctrine is not tolerated. It is a world where euthanasia is practiced widely and religion hardly practiced at all. The lord of this nightmare world is a benign-looking politician intent on power in the name of peace and intent on the destruction of religion in the name of truth. Author Dale Alquist said it best, whether or not Monsignor Benson's picture of our future is accurate, the fact is his picture of our present is chillingly accurate. Recommended by Pope Benedict XVI and by Pope Francis, Lord of the World is a must-read. It's also the latest release in the Catholic Answers Classics series. Order your copy of Lord of the World now by calling 1-888-291-8000 or by visiting Catholic.com or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, open forum. Patrick Madrid, our guest this hour. Tim Staples, next hour. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our number, 888-318-7884. And when we went to the break, Patrick was going to fill us in on maybe a time. Well, I asked you if there's an analogous time in the whole history of the church that's like what we're living through today. And you were starting to say you think that the history of the Catholic Church is one of constant tumult, really.
I do. My understanding of church history leads me to believe that there has always been a kind of tumult, that's a great word for it, in the church. Insofar as there always seems to be either persecution or controversy or problems with lay people who don't know the faith or some type of turmoil in the church. And sometimes it's all of the above all at once. And we can see it even when Jesus chose his first 12 handpicked men to follow him. One of them, Judas, betrayed him and committed suicide. Another one, Simon Peter, he denied Jesus 3 times. So even within the very kernel of the original church, we see that kind of problem and rivalry and issues and things. So my sense, trying to take the long view, is as difficult as it sometimes may seem and as dire as it sometimes seems in the church, and we are seeing some things happening now that do appear dire and they do appear very daunting to us, but I'm always reminded of the story in the Gospels where Jesus is asleep in the back of the fishing boat during a big storm. I talk about this parable from time to time, or the story from time to time on my own radio show, and I point out that we should take comfort from the fact that just as the apostles thought that they were about to go under in this big storm with all the waves and the lightning and the wind, and of course some of these apostles were actually seasoned fishermen, so they knew about storms, and for them to get scared, it's got to have been a pretty big storm. So they wake Jesus up and they say, Lord, don't you care that we're about to die here? And Jesus, of course, calms the storms. And then he says to them, why did you doubt? Oh, you of little faith. And I see in that example, a lesson for me and for you and for all of us, that no matter how difficult or treacherous or perilous the times may appear, it's happened before. If we live, I mean, if Jesus tarries long enough, it'll happen again. But the fact is, Jesus is always with his church, even at times when it seems like he might be, quote unquote, asleep. So that turmoil and tumult that the church always seems to be going through, to me, in an odd kind of way, is actually a proof, to my mind anyway, it's a proof of her divine institution, because were it not for the Lord being in his church, protecting his church, I think the church would have gone under many times over before now. So I see that as a point of encouragement.
It is. It is indeed. That right. You know, I suppose from we live it at the ground level. We don't see it from the, you know, from 60,000 feet, or you know, from some perspective far removed from it. And mm-hmm. so maybe we can start to think, well, our moment is somehow worse. You know, maybe.
Yeah, and I think it. I mean, it's always. I think it's natural for us to feel that way because, for one thing, we have perhaps an idealized idea or notion of what the church used to be like, and we forget that there were what we think of as maybe the golden age of the church. It had its own set of problems.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, let's not forget that Pope St. Pius X, he had to fight against modernism. Now, we're still fighting against modernism, but that was a really big deal back in those days. And we think of those days as, wow, everything was wonderful and everybody received Holy Communion on the tongue and everybody, you know, was just super great. But it really wasn't that way. So Each generation has its own set of challenges.
888-318-7884, the number. We go now to Michelle. Michelle, you are on with Patrick Madrid. Your question.
I have a question about Andrew Womack and his Word of Faith theology, I think is what you call it. I have someone very close to me who says a lot of things like how powerful your words are, and that if you are sick, it's because you don't have enough faith type of deal. And I never, like, something is just not quite right about it, but I never know how to respond. So just looking for some guidance there.
Sure. Well, the first thing I will say is that the Word of Faith theological approach is to say that if you want to be healthy, you want to be wealthy, you want to have a big house, you want to be successful in your career, you want to have a pretty wife, you want to have white teeth, whatever it is, you have to have faith. And all God is waiting for is for you to just have that faith so that he can, you know, pop that out there to you like he's a divine bellhop or a divine servant who's just going to give you what you want. Or I think a lot of people think that faith in the sense that they mean it is like putting a quarter into a gumball machine and God is obligated to give you a gumball. But that's not how it works.
No.
And Jesus himself said, in this world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. So he doesn't say in this world, if you have faith, everything's going to be on easy street. You won't have bad health. You'll have all the money that you want. You have a nice house. He doesn't say that. He says you will have tribulation, and tribulation can take various forms. So they are purveying. And I don't know this particular person, Andrew Womack. I've heard his name before, but I've never studied anything of him. So I couldn't tell you anything about him personally. But if it fits this general description of the health and wealth gospel, prosperity gospel, name it and claim it, that kind of thing, that's basically just junk theology. It's not biblical, even though they can quote many Bible verses, like where Jesus says, you know, if you had faith the size of a mustard seed, you could tell this mountain to get up and throw itself into the ocean. We have to understand that Jesus did not mean that in the sense that if you want a new car, you have to gin up all this faith to have the car. That's not what he's referring to. It's fidelity to the gospel. It's trusting in Jesus. It's seeking holiness and dying trying. That's what it's all about. It's not about the Rolex or the private jet or the mansion or any of those things. And you'll notice that the people who are really intent upon promoting that are the people who have the big Rolex and the big house and the private jet. They want to keep that money coming in. So,
yeah.
Does that help you, Michelle?
That is helpful. So that could just be something that I say back. I mean, point out the parts of the gospel and Okay.
Yeah. And if you go to the Catholic Answers website, Michelle, there is a wealth, sorry about the pun there. That was an unintended pun, but there is a wealth of information at Catholic.com. If you just go in the search bar and type in prosperity gospel or health and wealth, one of those keyword phrases, you'll find a lot of articles that have been written over the years that will lay it out for you chapter and verse in scripture so that you'll be even more prepared the next time this comes up.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you very
much. You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Michelle. I didn't want to put Michelle on the spot by suggesting this. We still got her there, but there's so many of these different theologies coming at us, Patrick. You do a class, an online class in apologetics. These things are very, very helpful. For example, for your online apologetics class, that's at Holy Apostles.
Yeah, thank you for asking, Si. I do teach a graduate and undergraduate course in apologetics. It's at Holy Apostles College and Seminary. The website, if people want to check it out, it's holyapostles.edu. That's plural, by the way, holyapostles.edu/Patrick. You got to put the slash Patrick at the end. And as a matter of fact, our fall semester will be starting in the latter part of August, so they're beginning to start registering people for the fall semester. What's cool about that class is that, number one, it's fully accredited, so people can take the course toward an undergraduate degree or toward a graduate degree, or they can also take it for personal enrichment. And there's a great reduction in the tuition if you take it just for personal enrichment. But the neat thing about it is that it's entirely online. So nobody has to sit in a classroom. You don't have to be at a particular time in a classroom, like online or anything. You do it all at your own time on your laptop at home with a cup of coffee. So it's been a roaring success. And every semester, fall, spring, and summer, the class that I teach in apologetics is maxed out to the gills. So those who are interested in learning how to talk to people who promote something, maybe in all sincerity, but they're promoting something that is aberrant or it's unbiblical, and you'd like to know how to talk to them but not drive them away, mm-hmm. and you want to be able to draw them back toward Jesus, back toward the church, even if they think that they're already with Jesus. Sometimes people are still purveying things that are not true. Well, this course that I teach in apologetics can really help with that.
And so you go to sitting on Holy Apostles.
Yes, holyapostles.edu/Patrick. And that'll take you right to the page for where you can get all the information about taking this academic course with me. And I teach it directly and I interact with all the students for the whole semester. It's a 15-week course. And there's just a tremendous amount of information. The common comment that I get, Si, at the end of the semester when the students do their evaluation is, this course changed my life. I hear that over and over again from students who go into it kind of interested but not quite sure what to expect. They come out of it saying the course just changed their life because they suddenly now see how do you actually defend the faith in a way that's not defensive and not off-putting and not right. driving people further away. So it's really a beautiful thing to see students go through that course.
And the fullness of the faith itself is a beautiful thing, a wonderful thing to be filled in on, to have a grasp of. Let's go to Nicole in Woodbridge, Virginia, listening on EWTN.com. Nicole, your question for Patrick Madrid.
Yeah, hello. I was calling. I was at a fair recently, and they had a pole dancing class routine. And it left me with a few questions, both me and my teenager. One was, is stripping a sin? And then the second one is, if so or if not, how should we view pole dancing as an exercise class?
Okay. Well, the simple answer is, yeah, it's a sin because it is designed to incite lust. And lust is one of the seven deadly sins. And Jesus himself said, if you look at a woman with lust in your heart, you've committed adultery. So there's a really clear boundary here that anything, whether it's fashion or activities, and this would be one of them, that would incite lust and would actually harm or damage somebody's chastity would necessarily be sinful. And I'll add to that, the realization or the recognition that God created the sexual urge in all of us to be a very powerful driving force. And that's true, generally speaking, of almost all people. I mean, I'm talking above the age of childhood. And so because it's so powerful and because it's so alluring and because it's so beautiful, I mean, God created this to be beautiful. The human body is beautiful. And we have this tremendous appetite for that. That's why we have to be extra careful that we not approach this issue and display our bodies and so forth in a way that could actually cause people to get to lose control, which is frankly, that's what happens. That's where lust gets aroused. So without going into any nitty gritty, I'll just simply say the general principle of the church is because we're all sinners, because we're all weak, because we all easily can fall in this area, and especially when it comes to the visuals, that's why we have to be extra careful. So for all those reasons, I would say stay far away from anything like that. It would be very, very damaging to certainly for your children, and it would just be damaging all the way around. So just stay away from that.
Nicole?
Okay, yeah. So you would include in that answer the idea of just even the classes that are promoted as being for exercise. Is that right?
Well, my understanding, and I don't have deep familiarity with this topic, but my understanding would be that pole dancing is inherently connected to stripping. So for that reason, I don't know that there is a kind of pole dancing that's not involved with that. I've never even heard of such a thing. So even just because of the unsavory aspect of the whole thing, I would just stay far away from it. I would, if you want to exercise, do jumping jacks or go bike riding or something like that. But pole dancing, I definitely would not recommend that.
Or kung fu.
Kung fu is awesome.
Yeah, you could try kung fu.
Yeah.
Thanks, Nicole. Thanks very much. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Patrick Madrid Open Forum on Catholic Answers right after this.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, my friends. This is Christopher Check, president of Catholic Answers. In 1 Corinthians, St. Paul exhorts Christians to have no dissensions among themselves and to be united in the same mind. And yet, since Martin Luther's rebellion exactly 500 years ago, the apostles' injunction seems to have gone unheeded. What is the faithful Catholic who desires Christian unity to do? Join us at the Catholic Answers National Conference this September 28th to 30th, right here in San Diego. The theme of the conference is the reunion of all Christians. If you want to learn how to evangelize our separated brethren with charity, you don't want to miss this conference, featuring all your favorite Catholic Answers speakers and some superb guests, too. Registration is priced lower than last year, and we have an even lovelier hotel with a better room rate. And September is the very best month to visit San Diego. For all the details, visit CatholicAnswersConference.com. Early bird registration savings expire July 2nd. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com and register today.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections has recently formed a partnership featuring a dual enrollment program with Franciscan University of Steubenville. Our website is homeschoolconnections.com. We are a proud sponsor of Catholic Answers Live.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Whew, I am winded from doing my kung fu at the break, but we go now to Emma in Hayden, Idaho, listening on Catholic.com. Your question for Patrick Madrid, Emma.
Hello, how are you guys?
Tired from all the kung fu we're doing.
I can't bet. I'm going to tell you this came from my complete heart and complete surrender. I'm a Christian. I'm not a Catholic, but I started listening to you guys about 5 years ago. My best friend is a nun. I mean, you know, and I've always defended your faith to other Christians who want to bash you. But I really felt God was convicting me to pray the rosary, and I did it for 9 months. And almost every day, the least I would do it would be 5 days a week. I prayed it on the radio station here when it comes in. And I did it completely expecting that I would become Catholic, and it didn't happen. And in my prayer life, I have a very strong prayer life. I really felt like the Lord was saying, I have you right where I want you. So, I don't know where that
is. So you're saying what gives?
Yeah.
And first, let me recommend a book. I'll offer you some thoughts. First, the book I'd recommend is by Father Mitch Pacwa. It's called How to Listen When God is Speaking. And it's a fine book. It's not very long. It's kind of short and sweet, if you ask me. But it's really good because it gets to the heart of the question that you're asking. How do you know if this is God saying this to you, or is this your own imagination, or is this some external idea that's come to you? And at times it can be very difficult to know. So I'll start you off by writing you a prescription to get that book, How to Listen When God is Speaking. Now, my sense is that, obviously, and I'm sure you already guessed this, I'm biased in favor of the Catholic Church because I am Catholic, and I really do genuinely believe that the Holy Spirit is drawing all people toward the fullness of the truth in the Catholic Church. Some people take much longer than others. Some people have a very windy route to get there, a long and winding road, as a certain song once said. So everybody's different in the journey that they make, but the destination ultimately is all the same. So my advice would be, since you're already invoking the intercession of the Blessed Virgin Mary, just continue to trust God, continue to ask Him to show you. If you're looking for something that will give you, in addition to the Catholic radio that you've been listening to, which is fantastic, I encourage you to do that. And I'm on the air every morning for 3 hours. If you want to listen to my program.
Thank you.
Okay, great. So just to pop that out there, if you want to listen to that. But also, avail yourself of the good books that are out there. There are many different, you might want to pick up, for example, the Surprised by Truth volumes. I would say maybe volume one might be good. And that's a book of conversion testimonies where different people, in that case, it's former Protestants who describe what they went through to become Catholic. And some of those may speak to your heart as well. It sounds like maybe there's an intellectual formation that needs to happen in addition to the ongoing spiritual formation.
There might be a roadblock here for me. I did not like the rosary. I got to a point where I realized, you know, this is what you have to do with your whole heart. Towards the end, it didn't make me mad anymore, but it did make me sad because there were so many more prayers to Mary than there were to Jesus. And maybe you could speak to that in a way that I would understand why that is.
That is a common question. I wonder if, now are you, if I can ask you a kind of a personal question, are you married?
Mm-hmm. I am, mother of five.
Okay, awesome. So you probably tell your husband and your kids, I love you, in the course of a given day, I'm guessing, probably quite a few times.
Yeah.
Now, maybe in your, I don't know how often you kneel down and close your eyes and fold your hands and say your prayers, but perhaps, if I had to guess, numerically, you say, I love you to God, probably less often than you say, I love you to your husband and to your kids. It doesn't mean that you love God any less than them. In fact, you love God more. But because you have a special relationship with your husband and your children, you're saying it to them all the time. So in a similar kind of way, we Catholics, we have a loving relationship with the Mother of Jesus. She's the mother of the whole church. Revelation chapter 12, verse 17, talks about this woman who gives birth to this male child who is the Messiah, Jesus. The dragon goes off to wage war against her, it says, and the rest of her offspring, the rest of her children, that is those who have faith in Jesus and follow him. Well, that's you and me. So we have a relationship with the Blessed Virgin Mary that doesn't detract from our relationship with Jesus. It doesn't take away from our relationship with Almighty God. In fact, I would say it enhances it. But it's not as though God is counting up, wait a minute, she said I love you to Mary more often than she said to me, you know? He understands.
That's a good point.
You see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying, and I will continue on the journey, and I thank you. I don't know if I'm less confused, but I'm
going to
continue along the path. I'll let you know.
Well, you know, there's a saying in the Catholic world. I think it was Saint Hildegard of Bingen who came up with this phrase, the cloud of unknowing. And it sounds as though you are traveling. You're on the journey in a kind of cloud of unknowing, which is, in a way, a beautiful thing, because God is not making clear to you some of these truths quite yet. And it's an opportunity or an invitation to deeper faith, trusting in Him and following Him, even though you don't necessarily fully understand it. But you're getting there little by little.
Little by slow. Okay, thank you so much, Patrick.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Hildegard of Bingen, that's who I was thinking of. I don't know if I said Hildegard the first time.
It's funny that you mentioned Hildegard, because Darren, our own producer here, is working on a book called The Hildegard of Bingen Option. I don't know if... Really? What? I'm serious. Ethan in Los Angeles, California, listening on the mighty 930 AM Immaculate Heart Radio. Your question for Patrick Madrid.
Yes, at the beginning the program I heard, you mentioned about priest dancing.
Yes.
I worked in the Los Angeles Diocese, and my son used to go to school in the Los Angeles Diocese. And this issue seems to keep coming up here with the examples of priest dancing. So my question was, is dancing part of the priestly duties?
No.
It's not.
No, but it doesn't. Okay, let's pause here for a second. Are you referring to the video that was circulating on social media about Father Leo paddling hug and the other priest? I think it's Father Mano, if I'm not mistaken. And they were dancing, and that caused a controversy. Is that what you're thinking of?
My own experience was, like, when I was working in the diocese, priests would say, like, they have, like, dance recital lessons and things like that. I just thought that was weird. And I'm like, what, you know, and that was one example. Or if there was the fiesta, like those community fairs, mm-hmm. during the year, mm-hmm. right. there would be, like, maybe the priest would dance with the female.
Okay, so we're talking about two different things here. And I'm looking at the clock, so forgive my interruption, but I don't want to run out of time. Number one, I agree with you if you're concerned about why are priests dancing with women and why are they doing kind of like romantic dances, that kind of thing. I would say, and I think you would agree with me on this, is that that's not really proper for a priest. It's not really proper for him because of his sacred office and because of the gravitas of what he represents for all of us. So if that's what you're aiming at there, I agree with you. It should not be done. That's my perspective on this. However, what got this whole ball rolling was a video of two priests who were not at Mass. This was not at Mass. This was at a conference, a Steubenville conference, and they were kind of doing this. It appeared to me from the... It's like 30 seconds long, so that's all I saw. I don't know the rest of the context, but from the appearance of it, they were doing an impromptu breakdance session where they were doing these breakdance moves, and it's actually kind of funny to look at. And they were doing it, I think, in the same spirit that St. John Bosco used to entertain the boys. He would walk on a tightrope, and he would juggle things, and he would do all kinds of funny things, even pratfalls. And you might say, yeah, but he's a priest. He shouldn't be doing that. But he was doing it for a reason. He was doing it to reach these young people. And he did. He was very effective at doing that. So he employed these kind of funny ways of doing that that didn't conflict with his priesthood. And there's the music. Anyway, I don't think that what those two priests did was in any way wrong. It certainly is controversial, but I don't think what they did was wrong.
Thank you very much for that call. Thank you very much, Patrick Madrid, for spending the hour with us.
My pleasure. Always good to work with you, Si.
And now we will send you back to the Wolves, and good luck.
And
you.
The tacos, too.
Tuesday. I'm here another hour with Tim Staples after this. I'm not getting any tacos for a while.
I'm getting tacos right now.
All right. Coming up next, an hour with Tim Staples. Again, open forum. Any question you have on the life, the history, the faith of the Catholic Church, they're all welcome. 888-318-7884, our number. We'll be right back after this.